cliffcentral.com.
Sia with elastic heart. Elastic heart. Isn't that how you say it?
No, well,
elastic heart.
You know what? You can say it whichever way you like.
If you are wondering where our Sia is, he's in Cape Town at the Design in Durban. Now, if you're a creative, an outspoken street artist, a dash of full color at Nedbank, they don't expect you to be an expert at banking too. Money is a gray area, especially for independent artists, right?
Sure.
There's incredible freedom in looking at money differently. The boundaries that come with a more traditional approach to it no longer exist, and you can take it in any direction you like. You don't have to hold back anymore. Come and experience Nedbank's Reimagination Project, an initiative aimed at demonstrating how when money is well managed, it can make a real difference in people's lives. At Design Indaba, from the 1st until the 3rd of March 2017, they'll be talking to some of Nedbank's representatives and thought leaders on cliffcentral.com. In fact, we'll be talking to somebody at 7:45 this morning to share some more about how to explore the potential of money with the Nedbank Reimagine Project. Join us. Let's reimagine. That's coming up. What else is in the news?
Well, Gareth, the EFA, the O, the EFA.
Who are they?
Sorry.
EFA.
The EFA. They are a new political party that I will be.
What does that stand for? Environmental Freedom Architects.
I haven't decided yet what exactly the EFA stands for,
it's
but
your
no.
Party.
The EFF. Tabled a motion in the National Assembly calling for the amendment of the Constitution to accelerate land transformation. This, of course, pertains to the expropriation bill, right? Because the EFF want land expropriation without compensation. But the ANC yesterday said that they do not agree with them at all.
Yeah, they shut it down.
The ANC's Nonceba Mhlaudi said the EFF's motion is misplaced and overlooks various programs and reviews which are currently underway. So the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform have already undertaken to do an audit of land ownership, right? This was according to Mhlaudi. Once that audit is complete, a single law will be developed to address the issue of land restitution, as well as the necessary constitutional amendments that will be taken to affect the process.
Yeah, this is just a political hot potato.
The expropriation bill clearly states that property may be expropriated only in terms of the law of general application for public purpose and in the public interest.
In other words, you can't exploit, sorry, you cannot expropriate Mabali in order to give Ben property. Similarly, you can't expropriate Ben to give Mabali property. The only time that you're allowed to expropriate people without compensation, or even just expropriate them full stop, is when it is in the public interest. Like, let's say, on Mabali's property, they need to build a military base, or an airport, or a security bunker, or something like that. Then they can say, look, Mabs, we're coming for your house. I'm sorry.
But you've got to go. You got to go.
That's exactly where we need to build a big tower for... I don't know, Angie Mocheca to sit in and scream, Rapunzel, Rapunzel, let down your hair. And if they can show their good reasons. I mean, this is what happened to my grandparents. They owned a farm out near the Hartbeespoort Dam. And the National Party government under Forster decided they needed to expropriate that property in order to build the Pelindaba nuclear plant. So they said to my grandparents, bye-bye. Get off your property. We don't care that this house was built, 100 years ago.
Yeah.
And it's your family property and all your family are buried up on that hill there. We don't care.
Yeah.
Get out because we're the government and we need this property for a nuclear plant. Can you imagine?
Sure.
To build bombs? Madness.
So that is currently how, the expropriation bill, how it currently stands. Now, at the time that he was Chief Justice, Dikgang Moseneke had said that the Constitution is radical on property laws, was a word that he used. He had said that government had failed to test the radical transformational reach of the idea of compensation for expropriation being based on the just and equitable principle. So this land expropriation topic, you know, still very much get people either nervous and some people excited. And then, of course, all the political leaders will try and jump in there and make it work in their benefit.
Let's just think about this for a second. You either believe in property law or you don't. If you don't believe in property law, there's no point in me taking property away from Ben and giving it to Mabali, because if she doesn't believe in property law, someone's going to take it from her.
Mm.
If you do believe in property law, you believe what you own, what you've earned, what you've paid for is yours. And I'm not allowed to take it away from you, or else that's criminal. That's called theft. Right? So similarly, if there was a situation where Ben was, for various reasons, occupying land that he was not allowed to occupy. Let's say that he had taken land illegally from Mabale's ancestors 70 years ago, and she could prove that. Then Mabale can go to Ben and say, look, you've got to give me this, at least some of this land. It's my ancestral land. I can prove that my ancestors lived here, blah, blah, blah. And then Ben gives up a piece of it. And there's an agreement. There's a fair and equitable thing that happens here. Now, Ben doesn't feel like he's been robbed because he got paid for it by the government. And Mabali doesn't feel like she's been robbed because she got the land that she feels is hers. Right?
Yeah, but what are the chances of that happening, though?
Sounds far too reasonable.
It's too reasonable because everybody's always going to feel ripped off on some level.
Well, I mean, this is the thing with, because, you know, you talk about either you believe in property law or you don't. But I imagine for a lot of South Africans, the topic of land is more emotional than anything else. And very few of us actually understand property law and won't bother trying to read up on it to understand it.
No, and it is emotive because then people go, yeah, give us back the land.
Yeah,
you know?
and there's going to be a winner and there's going to be a loser.
But imagine if we took all the land in South Africa and everybody got a piece of it. Those people who have a piece of the crappy Northern Cape where you can't grow anything, no one wants to live there.
Well, what currently happens on the crappy bits of lands? Like what happens there?
There's a lot of the biggest landowner in the country is?
Government.
Correct. Now, if they just parceled out parts of the land that they own, then I think they would already satisfy and alleviate a lot of this tension. But this idea of land, as Mabali just said, is, and she's so right, it's emotional.
Mm.
People don't feel like they have any skin in the game. They're like, this is my country, but I own nothing. If you own a piece of land, even if it's the size of this desk, you can borrow against that. You have some dignity. You need to own a piece of the earth. Otherwise, you're just a peasant farmer. You work for someone else. You're renting. You need to own something. I think everybody should own a piece of land. And most of us have had to work for our piece of land. And some people have worked and never got their piece of land. But it's got to be just and equitable. And either you're going to believe in property law, in which case land is an issue, or you're not going to believe in property law. In which case, everybody must just take whatever they want. And then it's pandemonium. Because how do you protect your land the next time around?
But I don't know that I don't know that I even trust government then to be overseer of things. Or would that fall solely on the courts?
Well,
or would government be the one overseeing the whole?
Can you imagine?
I can't trust government.
Listen, the point is that even the president doesn't own his land. We've had this discussion before. I had Leon Lowe of the Free Market Foundation out here, 2 weeks ago? And we were talking about this very thing. The president doesn't own his land. The Zulu king owns his land.
So then why were we all up in arms about Nkandla then?
Because he's got a freehold or a leasehold on the property, which he basically gets from the Ingonyama Trust, and then he's allowed to build his own homestead on there. He used public funds to build that homestead. But the property doesn't belong to him. It's so messed up. So basically, the king of the Zulu is still a feudal lord.
It almost reminds me of the Queen of England.
It is. It's exactly like
that. Still owns Australia.
The king of the Zulu is still a feudal lord over most of Northern KwaZulu-Natal. It's ridiculous. It's like the king of Swaziland is the owner of all the land in Swaziland. The king of Lesotho is the same thing. So in this country where we believe we're all citizens, not subjects, you should own a piece, even if it's the size of a postage stamp. You should own a piece of land. should be everybody. But you can't just take it from someone else, because then it'll be taken from you.
Yeah, I mean, it will be very interesting to see how this gets rolled out.
Yeah,
it's not going to be an easy process.
And you see, the EFF use it as such a political playing card. Mm,
they do. They really do.
Because the EFF keeps saying, ah, the land, the land, the land. What are you going to do with the land? You think Julius is interested in farming? Can you see Floyd Chivambu growing potatoes? I don't see that happening.
I don't know.
I don't see Buyisen Ndlozi having huge commercial spinach farms. Come on. Let's be serious about this. No one wants more land than they absolutely need. Because all you have to do is look after it and pay for it and make it useful. Land can be a bugbear. I know commercial farmers who are struggling their backsides off. They have to borrow money here and borrow money there so they can buy seeds, so they can buy livestock, so they can water their crops, so they can buy fertilizer. Farming's no joke. You want land so badly? Cool. Take it. Let's see how well you do with your farm. There are countless examples all over the world of where people have ended up with land and they weren't really that excited about it. They just wanted it because it would make them appear to be rich. Sometimes you can't sell it. Sometimes it's not necessarily very fertile. Let the experts in land have the land, and the rest of us own just the place that we live. That would be nice. And most people don't even have that, right?
Yeah, I mean, I keep forgetting his name from the Free Market Foundation.
Leon Lowe. By the way, I'm speaking at the Free Market Foundation tonight.
Oh, what are you talking about?
Free speech and the internet.
Okay.
Yes, so if you want to know more, I think you can go to their website, Free Market Foundation. I think it's fmf.org.za, but I'll check that for you. Yeah, so what were you going to say about
that? No, I mean, I just remember him saying that, you know, at the very least, people just want to know that they at least own the little piece of land that their house is on, at the very least, you know. I mean, not everybody wants to own land so much that they can have a farm. They just want to know that they own the little piece that their house is on.
Well, he was saying that people in townships don't even have their own land.
Yeah, they don't.
They don't own their own house.
Yeah.
They don't have the title deeds to their own shack. They should have that. I mean, who does own that property? It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
FreeMarketFoundation.com if you're looking for it. FreeMarketFoundation.com. And I'll be talking there tonight. If you want to know more, you can go find out on the website. Okay, what else?
So, what has been a very, another very sensitive issue and, you know, a very hot talking point, Gareth, is the issue of, you know, the xenophobic violence or tensions or whatever you want to call them that we've seen over the last few days. And so foreign nationals now who are based in Jeppestown have called on police to increase their presence in the area because they are feeling threatened by the locals. So it's now foreigners who are feeling threatened by South Africans. This is to protect their lives and not only respond when their shops have been looted, which is a big problem. So last night, police used stun grenades. They had to use rubber bullets to disperse a group of residents who had attacked foreign-owned shops and tried to barricade the M2 highway. Calm was eventually restored in the area, which allowed some foreign nationals to continue trading. Many of them fear for their lives come nighttime, though.
I feel sorry for these people.
Like, what would happen if they had a march?
Who?
The foreign nationals. What if they would have a march? You know, there's this big march now about our poor me.
I don't know what would happen. I mean,
well, it would be a riot. They would be stoned in the streets if they were to do that, which is double standards, clearly.
Yeah, they would be. They'd be targeted horribly. I just feel bad because do you know that if you are not a citizen of South Africa and you don't have your papers, you can't go and, this is what I hear. Yesterday, I was speaking to A.C. Lumumba from Zimbabwe, and he was telling me that if you're an illegal immigrant and you don't have your papers, you can't go and lay a charge at the police station when someone assaults you. If someone steals your stuff, you can't go and say, you know, there's been theft.
So basically, you don't have access to all of the rights that South Africans have.
You don't have
any. Because you're a foreigner.
You're basically a second class of citizen. You don't. None of the stuff in the Constitution applies to you just because you don't have that paper? That doesn't seem right. Does it? That doesn't seem fair. Someone can walk into your house, rape your wife, steal your TV, kick you in the head, and you have no recourse in law. Just because you don't have a piece of paper that says, I'm South African. That seems to me to be completely unkind. At the very least. Egregious and harmful and dangerous and contrary to human rights at the most.
And then, what do you say when people tell you, yeah, but Gareth, the law is the law?
Well, that shouldn't be the law. If we're a human rights country, if we're a country that prides ourselves on being signatories to various human rights charters all over the world, if we conform to the UN's conditions for basic human rights, if we believe in our first chapter of our own constitution, it doesn't say South Africans only. It says humans. It says people. We can't treat people like that just because they speak a different language or they're from a different country. They're across the border. And they didn't come here because they wanted to take advantage of all the rights we're handing out left, right, and center. A lot of them came here because they had no option. They had no hope at home. It's hell back there. So we take people who are desperate and we treat them worse than criminals. Because criminals can treat them badly and get away with it. That's just wrong. Doesn't feel good.
And sometimes those criminals are South African themselves, but seemingly then that's something that we can turn a blind eye to.
Oh, we don't have a problem with that. Somehow we just pretend, nothing to see here. Yeah. Keep moving on. And then we say we're nice people. We say, we're a democracy.
A rainbow nation.
Yeah. We won't even, sure, we're a rainbow nation, but let someone who doesn't fit into our little rainbow come in. Something outside the spectrum. You watch how quickly we throw that out. You see how quickly we become the opposite of a human rights culture. Makes me crazy. Jared says, what happens in the crappy Northern Cape is mostly cattle, sheep, and game farming. And if you do have land next to either the Vaal or the Orange River, crop farming is practiced, but it's rare. So that's what happens in the Northern Cape. Thank you, Jared. Supernova says, the only reason private education and private hospitals are doing well is because our government is doing such a cuck job. Imagine if government were providing proper services, these companies would struggle. Good point. Well put. All right. I want to get to Greg Nicholson in a moment. Mubs, what else do you have for us before we move on to Greg?
Okay. Let's see here. What are we working with? Oh, well, we've got a woman from Maryland in the United States who was given, was sentenced to 50 years in prison. This is after she gave her 5-year-old son a fatal overdose of antihistamine before setting her car on fire with the boy inside.
Oh, what a great mom.
It's been reported that 35-year-old Narges Shafeirad was sentenced this week.
Yeah.
She spoke about having gone through a bitter divorce and enduring a custody fight, makes sense to take it out on your 5-year-old.
Take it out on your 5-year-old, you brilliant, brilliant human being.
She pleaded guilty in July to first-degree murder in the death of Daniel Dana. This is now the son.
Mm-hmm.
An autopsy revealed that Daniel died of the overdose. After prosecutors say that the mother had forced him to swallow the medication containing the antihistamine. 50 years in prison, she was sentenced this week.
Terrible. What
a horrible human being.
Completely.
And, like, this is where I think you should have a license again for the whole offspring. So that's a horrible example.
Not everybody's fit to be a parent.
They really aren't fit. And it's just not even being fit. Like, not being fit's leaving, I don't know, the stove on. You might touch it.
Mm.
That's like a whole different level.
I want to talk to Greg Nicholson. That's a very disturbing story about all this xenophobia because it's been in the news for a couple of days now, and he's obviously a reporter for the Daily Maverick. Greg Nicholson is also a co-host of the Daily Maverick show right here on cliffcentral.com. Good morning, Greg. It's nice to talk to you again. You guys are on Tuesdays. People mustn't miss the show. But just in case they don't already know, you've been following these stories for a couple of years now, and it doesn't seem to be going away. Every now and then it flares up again. We hear about looting. We hear about people complaining about foreigners, being criminal in certain areas. But we know what it really is, and it's called xenophobia, even though the president doesn't believe that's a real thing. What's the latest story on the ground?
The latest attacks mostly have centered around Jeppe's Hostel in Johannesburg, where, as I think many people know, there's a men's hostel around there that is often quite known for sort of linking onto the bandwagon of these xenophobic attacks. And so the other night, I think it was Sunday night, there was a number of stores looted there, I think about 12 people arrested. And it's just sort of a sign as to how, once these attacks start and once this tinderbox of anger and hatred towards certain foreigners is set alight, how it spreads and how it continues to sort of spark up in these specific areas that always do these types of attacks.
Now, Greg, if it were true that these were justifiable claims by people who are making these attacks upon foreign nationals, if it were true, then the stories would be consistent all across various communities and various places geographically and at various levels of income. But that does not turn out to be the case. It seems that often the foreign nationals are targeted just because they're in a weaker legal position, perhaps because they are in a stronger economic position in terms of having their own little businesses. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't seem to me to be justifiable that you could say that these people are all criminals.
No, of course not. That's a ridiculous notion. So I think what often happens is, there's complex causes for these issues. And people who say that this is crime are right. But we can also have xenophobia or Afrophobia motivated crimes. Mm-hmm. So I think we have complex causes, including access to social economic resources. So in areas where people are upset that perhaps housing is poor, but no water and sanitation, a lack of jobs and employment, a lack of locally owned business, things like that, sort of fuels, and then people see these foreigners doing fairly reasonably well. Then there's also this idea, this notion that foreigners are almost wholly responsible for the crime in our city and in our country. I think that just comes down to just stereotypes and discrimination, where we want to look at perhaps the Nigerians who might be involved in drug dealing rather than Nigerians who might be here as doctors.
Yeah, correct.
And then I think there's also a big problem on the crime issue is that the government hasn't done enough. Obviously, it's an enormous problem, but the SAPS still struggles and often can even be in cahoots with gangs and crime syndicates. Yeah. So I think those are some of the contributing factors that sort of spark this xenophobia. But then I think at the same time, there's a more sort of social and perhaps philosophical problem of I think what often people call South African exceptionalism, of putting South Africans above other Africans across the continent, and looking down on the citizens from various other countries and sort of assuming that they're not worthy and worse than us here.
The first of your points there about how service delivery and sometimes the socioeconomic conditions perpetuated by perhaps a place or some places where government have not necessarily delivered. Instead of taking out that frustration on government, which would be the sensible thing to do, and in many of these communities they have tried that, but to no avail, they go for the next best thing, which is to victimize the victimized.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's something I think we see around the world, particularly at the moment, with sort of racist and xenophobic sentiment rising up in sort of many developed Western countries, where when sort of hopelessness seems to strike, it's easier to take it out on another and yes. Take your frustrations out on someone who you just want to blame rather than actually taking it to the source of your problems, because the government isn't always going to listen, isn't always going to help. And even sometimes these sort of things, like you see protests, unfortunately, sometimes it brings light to some of our biggest problems. So, for example, if foreigners are now attacked because of crime, government might actually start cracking down on crime because they don't want to look xenophobic. They want to sort of avoid this problem in the future. So sometimes the only way to get anything done is through these extreme, illegal and dangerous measures.
Now, you mentioned protests too. Ben asked a question earlier. What would happen if all the illegal immigrants had to protest? Some of these people are only illegal because they're not being helped out by Home Affairs when it comes to filling in the forms and getting some kind of documentation so that they are able to find work here, be able to live here without fear. For most of these foreign nationals, it's a horrible existence. But if they had to take to the streets and protest themselves, wouldn't that create more reason in the eyes of some for them to be singled out?
Yeah, I think most definitely. And I actually think it might be like an oxymoron or a tautology thinking about illegal immigrants protesting, because the government isn't, both DA and ANC governments in South Africa are not receptive to undocumented migrants. And they certainly don't mind locking them up and throwing them in Lindala and then deporting them. So I think if they were to take to the streets, me then we'd probably just get locked up and deported before their papers are even checked. But I think it would, at the same time, it would stoke further anger, this sort of underlying resentment for foreigners in South Africa, if sort of undocumented migrants were to sort of cause a mass protest or something like that, because it just doesn't take much to flare these flames. I think it could be viewed as a provocation.
While we're talking about that, what happens? What goes on in the illegal immigrant communities when something happens to them? If they're assaulted, if their stuff is stolen, if their house is burnt down, if they're victimized, if there is actual violence or physical threat to them, can they go and lay a charge, or will they immediately be deported?
No, they can go and lay a charge, but then the question is, how the police going to deal with them? So often they won't lay a charge. But I think it's important to point out. So when often these attacks happen, and when often, let's say if there's a mob justice, or if there's a looting on some of these sort of foreign-owned stores or businesses or individuals themselves, it's not like the protesters or the attackers are stopping them and asking to check their passport and decide whether they're legal or undocumented or illegal. They are indiscriminately attacking on their perceived notion of this stereotype of what this foreigner is. But, I think it's very difficult for those who do get attacked, because they're often scared to go to a police station, or if they do, they think the police won't help me. And there are cases as well of police, sort of laughing off these foreigners' attempts to report crimes. And so there's often very little recourse for them. Sometimes there's organizations that sort of rally around this stuff and try to help them either get back on their feet or lodge some sort of criminal complaint. But I think it's important to note one of the key things that happens when these attacks occur. So let's say on a Somali national or a Nigerian national, is that this information gets sort of fed back through the migration channels, through these WhatsApp groups, through just word of mouth of different migrants from those communities and countries. Mm. And probably faster than we hear about it right here in Johannesburg, back in some of these other areas, there's relatives and whole communities that hear about these attacks in South Africa. And so the impact that's having on South Africa's reputation around the continent is hugely damaging, because people now ask, when you're abroad, they ask, why do South Africans hate us? Why do you want to kill and attack us?
Yeah. Well, Greg, keep on the good work in terms of paying attention to these stories. Some of them are a lot less glamorous and interesting than some of the stories that we see in Parliament, some of the stories that we read about in the front pages of every paper, but they're as important, if not more so. And keep on writing that good stuff for the Daily Maverick too. We'll catch you on the show next week.
Cheers, guys. Take care.
Very good. Thank you. Greg Nicholson from the Daily Maverick. Excellent, excellent publication. Right, Mubs? We all agree.
Absolutely.
That's how we feel about it.
Excellent show as well that they've got.
Uh-huh. Yes, don't miss that. Kingsley Kapuri and Greg Nicholson host the Daily Maverick show on a Tuesday on cliffcentral.com.
That's because they don't do fake news.
Oh, absolutely.
True.
Not. Speaking of fake news, though, Ben sent me this. You know, the Donald Trump, America first, who's going to be the country that they consider second? First country to bring out their video is Holland.
Yes, Hope Holland got in there early.
Correct. And now there's a South African one. Do you want to hear it? No, really?
Okay.
All right, so here's the South African version of America first, South Africa second. Take a listen. This was done, I think, by KFM. Oh, hang on. Let me just plug this in. Sia's on the line. Hey, Sia, what's up?
See ya.
Good morning.
Where are you in Cape Town?
How are you guys doing?
Good. Where are you in Cape Town at the moment?
Live at the Artscape. Can you believe even at like 7:30, there's so much going on. Literally, there's like art everywhere. There's coffee shop stations galore. It's just like such a buzz already for the first day of design in Dublin for 2017.
All right, we're going to be talking to the head of group advertising for Nedbank in a short while about their involvement with Design Indaba, but what kind of people do you see there? Describe the people, Sia, because these are the design people. They're bound to stick out. And you're among them.
Yes. Listen, I'm trying to get my cool points to these people's levels. This is like the coolest of the cool. Hippies, beards, very cool shoes, bright colored outfits, and then Sia walks in looking morbid in black. But they really just seem like such creative people. I've been speaking to a few people here and there to get like their understanding of Design Indaba and why they're so excited for the conference and the festivities this year as well. But it just seems like everyone is just here to have a good time. Everyone is just here to, you know, be as interested as they are interesting. It's like the cliche, but it's so true right now. And it just seems like there's never going to be a dull moment. I've been here for about 30 minutes already, and it just seems like wherever you turn around, there's someone new. Wherever you turn around, there's something new that you haven't seen before. So I'm going to have me a lot of time and take me a lot of selfies.
All right, good. We'll follow you, and we'll find out what you're up to. Good. Thank you, Sia. We'll check in with you a little bit later.
Yeah.
All right, Sia Sangweni at the Design Indaba. By the way, Double D says, nobody is speaking about the bigger picture with regard to illegal immigrants. This government has a hardline approach to foreigners, and they're so concerned about the number of illegal immigrants, but they openly support Robert Mugabe. The ANC does not give a shit about people.
Mm-mm.
They really, not really, even a little really bit. Don't.
Right, here's the South Africa message. Why are we feeling full of ourselves? Listen to this.
This is a message from the people of South Africa.
Sawubona, President Donald Trump. That means hello in one of our 11 official languages. Welcome to this introduction video about South Africa. It's going to be great. Okay, so great. The best. Here in South Africa, we know words, okay? We know all the words. We also know property. Witness and Kandla. Our answer to Trump Tower. Built for our president and his family. It's huge, so huge. And here's the best thing. We got the people to pay for it. We don't have your favorite Mexican food, tacos. Tacos aren't even that great, okay? They're so done, so done, honestly. We have something like a million times better, okay? It's called the Fed Cook. And best of all, it fits snugly into tiny hands. Forget Mount Rushmore, okay? In our mother city of Cape Town, we have Table Mountain. It's so big, so huge, you're gonna love it, okay? Great for hiking. Also, great if a certain U.S. president wants his face carved onto it. For a fee, of course, just saying. So apparently, you rang up our honorable president, Jay-Z, the other day. Isn't he such a great guy? A great guy. Tremendous guy. You both have so much in common, like women. Interesting fact that's not alternative. President Zuma has more current wives than you have ex-wives. Now, isn't that cool? We've got the most amazing musicians in the universe, okay? And they're literally lining up to perform for you. Like the legendary Steve Hoffmeyer. Such a great guy, okay? We can literally have him on the next flight out. No, really. You can have him. Fake news. Ugh, the worst, okay? There's just tons and tons of dishonest media and fake news in South Africa, as well as news that we wish was fake. There's South Africa's own version of The Apprentice, as well as our own versions of just about everything, okay? The Voice, Fear Factor, Idols, Survivor, Strictly Come Dancing, okay, just to name a few. The ratings were amazing, totally amazing, beyond amazing, in fact, through the roof. beautiful women, we have them all. The best women in the world, okay? From beauty queens and superheroes to true champions, you name it, we got it. But please note, however, they will not tolerate any grabbing of any kind whatsoever, okay? Walls, oh man, we've got walls. Tons and tons of the most amazing walls you've ever seen. Oh, yes. We use them for protection. None on our border, however. But these seem to be doing the trick. And man, do we have beaches. Okay, just beaches and beaches and beaches. Great beaches. Millions and millions of people come every year. They just can't stay away. Also, so great for catching a natural tan, if you know what I mean. So yes, Mr. President, we totally understand that it's going to be America first. But can we just say South Africa second? Our country is great, the best. But don't just take our word for it. Why don't you pop in and visit? Please refer to this handy map in case you get lost.
And then they've marked Australia as South Africa just so that he doesn't come here. Oh, that's beautiful. All right, well done to the team at KFM for that one. Nice.
Yeah,
very nice.
Good.
All right. There's something else that's kind of fun. While we're messing around here, we've got a bit of time. The Mub sent this to me. Ed Sheeran, The Roots, and Jimmy Fallon play The Shape of You on classroom instruments.
Yeah, this is a thing that Jimmy will do sometimes with his guests as they will take.
He's got such a great band there, though. You know, he's got The Roots, and oh, they really are awesome. Amazing.
Yeah.
And they sit and he adjusts the camera himself. And then they all sit down and they play on these, like, classroom instruments. You got a great band, and then Ed Sheeran sitting there. He's got a Casio. Jimmy seems sober.
Club isn't the best place to find a lover, so the bar is where I go. Me and my friends out at the table doing shots, drinking fast, and then we talk slow. We'll come over and start up a conversation with just me, and trust me, I'll give it a chance. Yeah, I'll take my hands, find a man on the jukebox, and then we start to dance. I'm singing like, girl, you know I want your love. Your love is in me for somebody like me.
It's actually pretty good.
I'm even crazy, don't mind me. Say, boy, let's not talk too much. Grab on my waist and put that body on me. Come on now, follow my lead. Come, come on now, follow my lead.
Very nice. Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's pleasant.
I like it. Oh, I like it a lot. All right, Ben, anything else from you this morning? You always got some extra stuff up your sleeve.
Well, Gareth, I'm still mulling over this whole cheeky Watson thing in the Eastern Cape. And I just got to think that, you know, it's a time where, you know, last year was the worst year of rugby, right?
Yeah.
So Saru
is
saying,
is this year any better yet? Can't really tell, huh?
Well, it's very short, Gareth. It hasn't really happened yet. So, you know, Saru was saying, like, this is the year we're going to turn everything around. Things are going to become better. We're going to become more accountable. We're going to use money better, all that kind of stuff, because there's just nothing left anymore. But it's also got to the point where they've just stolen so much in this country, across the board, in sport as well. So an entrepreneurial thief like Cheeky Watson. So this could actually be the start of something really, really good. Like, people are saying, like, it just takes a few rotten eggs to get out of the way before we can start making some, like, progress. Well, maybe this is just it. Maybe this is just that one rotten egg and the rest will follow.
Well, he was most famous for kind of thrusting his son into the Springbok team.
Yeah, he was the first.
Poor old Luke Watson.
He was the first ever white quota player.
Which is so bizarre. I mean, he might not even have been so bad, but because of his dad's interference, the guy was shoehorned in, and a lot of people just found it very, very strange. Like, why was this white dude being shoehorned in? Cheeky Watson had a history of kind of chumming up with people who were on, I suppose, political party lists and people who had political interests. And he, for a long time, was supposedly, you know, a struggle comrade for a lot of these people. Cheeky Watson ended up being rewarded in respect of having authority in rugby in the Eastern Cape, and then clearly didn't deliver a damn thing. I mean, he was also one of the people who insisted that the Kings be part of any Super Rugby. Yeah, which, how terrible they are.
Which was all good and well, because a lot of talent comes from the Eastern Cape, right? But then just gets sold out because the Bulls go there and basically just buy children.
So it's just, I don't get too much more into that, but if we can just get rid of all of these shit stirrers and people who have nothing to offer, we can still go in a really good place. But something I really want to talk about, though, sorry, it's that cheeky Watson thing. It's like that kind of stuff makes me angry. But something that will make you laugh is that, you know that Nokia 3310?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so nostalgia. It's
who doesn't love the Nokia 3310? I mean, I know someone who said to me it was their first phone and they can't wait to buy a new one.
Yes, well, okay, so Nokia, they've decided this is going to be the greatest thing in the world because it's going to give you 22 hours talk time, right? If you were just to talk. So if Alan Ford had this phone, it would last him almost a full day. But it's like, it's 2 weeks battery standby or something. Sorry, for 1 month, if you don't use this phone, it'll still be there. You can play Snake on it. So people are thinking it's going to be one of those really durable, user-friendly Snake. Travel phones. Right?
I remember playing Snake.
Oh, it was the best.
So just think, if you don't have to charge this thing for a month, if you use it sparingly, right?
Yeah.
Let's just call it 2 weeks because you are going to use it. So people are thinking, oh, this is so great. You can travel all over with it. If you drop it, it's not going to be a big deal. You can play a Snake and it's got the buttons, right?
And because you don't have a smartphone effectively, you won't use as much data.
Exactly.
Data costs will be very, very low.
Well, this is where the side catch comes in, right? Is that it only functions on 2G.
Uh-oh.
Now, 2G is something that the really sophisticated countries in the world are turning off. So suddenly, you got this 3310, you think it's going to be so cool. Well, good luck using it in America. Using it in that part of the world.
Not going to work, huh?
And good luck using it as we all progress further and further. Like, it's great in Africa because we still have 2G networks that work, right?
Mm-hmm.
But pretty soon it's going to be switched off. It's one of those things that we're moving towards 4G being a daily reality. 3G, obviously, is where it's here already. And it's going to get to 5G. I mean, who knows from there? So you've got this phone and you're like, oh, cool, it doesn't work.
I still think it would be, for some people, like a novelty. I think a lot of people enjoy having this, the old 3310. I mean, do you remember what it looked like?
Because it's just like a brick phone.
Yeah, it's a terrible phone. But at least, shame, Nokia have found some reason to exist again. I mean, we'd forgotten they even existed, right? Although I did see someone over the weekend who had one of those clamshell phones. Remember those?
Where do you go to see things like this? Who do these people?
This was an older man. He's in his 70s. This is his phone. He's never decided to upgrade. He didn't want to. He likes this old clamshell phone. That's what he wants.
So just to give you an indication of where you can't use the Nokia 3310, Canada, Australia, Singapore, Switzerland, Taiwan, and the USA.
Why not?
They've either turned off the 2G network or in the process of turning it off, which is the only place. I mean, and like I said, this phone only runs on 2G.
Mm.
Well, it doesn't sound like there's a lot of places left after that. All right, let's get into something interesting here because we know Design Indaba is on the go and we here at cliffcentral.com are partnering with Design Indaba and with Nedbank to bring you all the information. We're going to speak to Buli Mba, who is the head of group advertising at Nedbank. Good morning, Buli. How are you? Buli, can you hear us? Hello.
I can you hear me?
There you are. Okay, good. Buli, I presume.
Hello.
Yeah, hi. I presume you're down at the Design Indaba right now.
I'm making my way down there as we speak.
Very good. Now, I'm always interested and curious about why Nedbank have partnered with Design Indaba. I mean, I understand that banking and design aren't two things that people would normally associate with each other, but it is interesting because it allows both you and Design Indaba to look a lot more layered than on first glance. I mean, for example, if you had a bank that was concerned about design, they would so much better be able to integrate into the lives of their customers, be able to deliver the kinds of services that they should. And people would start to think of them as a place where, you know, you have a holistic view rather than just a financial or a number crunching view of how the world should work. Is that primarily the reason that Nedbank's involved in Design Indaba?
Gareth, you have hit the nail on the head. So as you're aware, Design Indaba is really a platform that seeks, you know, to create a better world through the use of creativity.
Mm-hmm.
Now, from a Nedbank point of view, this really aligns with our brand purpose. So what we are trying to do is we want to use our financial expertise to do good. you know, so if Design Indaba is all about how to create sustainable solutions for, you know, for some of the challenges that we have in our country and in the world, Nedbank is saying, okay, so how can we be a part of this? Using creativity, using innovation to come up with ways of demonstrating that, you know, when you manage money well, it can make a real difference in people's lives. So for me, it's not two disparate thoughts. Mm-hmm. I mean, when you think about a top line to say, what is a bank doing with, you know, in the creative space, I see it as saying, if a bank is not being creative, if a bank is not trying to innovate, then you're dead in the water.
Right.
And if you're trying to come up with solutions to make the world a better place, then you need to be creative. And what better way than to partner with, you know, some of the most creative minds in the world, really.
Yeah, and there are so many projects that are being done under the umbrella of Design Indaba. I mean, we spoke to Ravi just the other day. He was telling us about housing projects, about sustainable energy projects, about furniture, about sculpture, about the kinds of things that create beautiful public spaces, not necessarily things that are always based on utility. But there is such a wide spectrum of stuff that is looked at Design Indaba that it really would be. It would be interesting to someone who's very left-brained, and it would be equally interesting to someone who's very right-brained, right?
Absolutely. So what that speaks to what we are actually doing at Design Indaba this year. We have challenged 40 of the top Design Indaba emerging creatives to use their ingenuity to try and solve for a socioeconomic challenge. So the challenge was issued to them last week, and they need to revert back today. So they've had a week to come and think about what challenge are they trying to solve. So tonight they're going to be pitching their ideas, and really the winning idea, Nedbank is going to bring this to life, to say, you've come up with this challenge, you've come up with an innovative way to resolve this challenge. How can we use our financial expertise to bring this to life? So that's the first part.
Do they get to choose the challenges, or do you choose them for them?
No, they get to choose the challenge. So the whole thing is around the potential of money when you reimagine the good that it can do, right? So that was really the brief to them. How can you reimagine the potential that money has and the potential that money can do when you think about it, you know, just in different ways and in different spaces?
Right. That sounds fascinating. I like that. What's the second part?
That I'm really excited to tell you about this one. The second part is I need everyone to get down to the Nedbank activations. We're calling this the Reimagination Project, right? So we've partnered with two visual artists, Karabo Moletsane and Daniel Ting Chong, who will use state-of-the-art creative technology to inspire the Design Indaba delegates. So they're going to be getting into almost these we've created these wonderful spaces where they're going to be using 4D technology to bring to life their interpretations of what it means when you reimagine the potential that money has.
How does that work? Because when I hear 4D spaces, I'm a little bit perplexed. Do you mean that they put on a virtual reality headset and start spray painting fake walls with graffiti?
That's exactly it. That's exactly it in the simplest format.
I knew it.
So they're gonna get into a space that we've created and get on, you know, put on these sort of Gear VR glasses, and they're really just going to start painting away, as you say, but in this virtual world, and people get to experience this virtually. So it's going to be amazing. You guys should come check it out.
And it will also be funny to watch people moving around in these virtual reality headsets. And then you can't see what they see, but afterwards you obviously get to take a picture, and then you can see what they've created. So it could be quite fun.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So they're going to be sharing the stuff on social media platforms. So if you want to check out what they're doing, just follow, you know, use the hashtag ReimagineMoney, and you can check out all the work that's going to be coming out of that experience.
Now, banks and creativity don't go together in most people's heads, but actually managing money creatively is a real skill, and it's something that requires people to think outside of the box. And you know, especially when it comes to what you guys do and what you associate with as a bank, the kinds of places where you spend your money, the kinds of associations you want people to have in their heads when they think of Nedbank. So Design Indaba is obviously one of those things that's a global event. It's not just South African.
Yeah, absolutely. It really aligns to our strategy. We really want to be able to connect, create these meaningful relationships mm-hmm. with our consumers. We want to connect with them through their passion points, you know, tapping into their interests. And the role that we play is then around this financial guidance. How do we then guide you in whatever profession that you're in, whether it be in, you know, in the arts or in creativity, how do we play a role using our expertise to help you do good?
Are you creative or are you more of the left brain sort of analytical person?
I'd like to think I'm creative.
I wasn't criticizing. I was just asking.
And I was just answering.
Yeah, I think you have to be in your line of work because you manage group advertising, right? So you have to make sure that that people get the right idea about what it is that your bank stands for and what kinds of things you guys want to be associated with, what sort of people Absolutely. You want to attract.
Yeah, and you know, in that space, you actually have to be creative because, you know, traditionally the bank is not necessarily a creative space. Hmm. So in order for us to get to a place where sort of Mike Brown envisions the bank to be, we need to create to push those creative boundaries. You know, we need to challenge the traditional thinking, the traditional ways of thinking, and just push those creative boundaries to get us to get outside of the box and outside of our little molds that we create for ourselves.
Well, if you're a creative, an outspoken street artist, or a dash of full color at Nedbank, they don't expect you to be an expert at banking too. Money is a gray area, especially for independent artists. There's incredible freedom in looking at money differently. The boundaries that come with a more traditional approach to it no longer fit, and you can find various ways to express yourself. You don't have to be held back anymore. Go and experience Nedbank's Reimagination Project, an initiative aimed at demonstrating how, when money is well managed, can make a real difference in people's lives at Design Indaba from the 1st, that's today, until the 3rd of March 2017. They'll be talking to some of Nedbank's representatives there. We've got Sia Sangweni down there as well doing some interviews, and he'll talk to some of the thought leaders from Nedbank and from Design Indaba to share more about how to explore the potential of money with the Nedbank Reimagination Project. Join us and let's reimagine. Thank you so much, Buli. Nice to speak to you.
Thank you so much, you guys.
Great. Have a good time at Design Indaba.
Thanks, you too. Bye-bye.
There you go. That's Bulimba, who's from Nedbank. Group advertising. They're involved with Design Indaba in a big way this year, as are we at cliffcentral.com. And remember, it's not just about people designing objects. It's also about solving problems. Really good design does both. That's what I learned last year when we covered this. It is now just about 8 o'clock. We've got plenty more stuff to get through. I just thought I'd throw this in because Sia found this clip the other day of, you know, there's that show on American TV called Divorce Court, where people get divorced publicly in this courtroom, right?
Is it like a Judge Judy setup?
Yeah, exactly the same setup. And then the husband and the wife, they're both in the witness stands, and then the judge says, all right, you won divorce, you, what happened? And it's kind of more entertainment than it is law.
Yeah.
But listen to what happens here.
We now join Lauren Harper and Deatra Hicks as Judge Lynn hears their case.
Mr. Harper, you've come here asking for $1,760, which you say is enough money to pay for 16 therapy sessions that you have had to undergo or need to undergo as a result of the mental trauma and abuse that you suffered at the hands of Mrs. Hicks.
I was an alcoholic, and I drank a lot for years. And my lying and stealing and everything that I was doing, it was as a direct result.
So she gets, this is the wife now, she's making those noises. She gets so annoyed at this guy, she just starts singing. She starts going, She's like, he's talking shit. Just listen to what she does.
Okay. For years, and my lying and stealing and everything that I was doing, it was as a direct result.
Now, Mrs. Hicks, you have a lovely voice, but I don't want to hear it now. Let it go.
Your Honor,
let
first of all, she likes to fight. Because, see, the problem is she's not used to nobody being able to talk to her, rebuttal her, and say something to her.
Joe, you see that foot? Working.
You're
going to dig a hole underneath my witness stand.
That's what I'm talking about.
Your Honor, you told me not to.
Do you have a problem with
with your anger.
Yes, and I'm going to anger management class. That's right. And I'm seeing a psychologist as well. And I have exercises. That's what the humming is coming from.
Oh, that's what the humming is for.
It's an exercise to calm
you.
Yes,
when you are excited in a state of agitation.
Your Honor.
How much singing did you do during the course of your marriage?
Well, I sing all the time. I'm a singer. But I just started this singing while he's talking to keep me calm.
Keep you cool.
Because he lied. Every time he lied, I just had to punch him in the face.
Woman got a problem. I think, I'm scared for her life. I still love her. We spent a lot of years together.
He's lying.
Listen.
Ooh, Your Honor.
I'm saying to you that because as a result of her anger, she don't know where to stop. Ooh. I don't care what the situation is. She ready to fight. We driving on the freeway. She had to be at work at 9:30.
Right.
I'm doing the speed limit. It's 65. She want me to go faster on the freeway. And I'm not going faster on the freeway for her. So I don't go faster.
Right.
Can you believe these people? This is like one of the most popular shows on TV in America. You can see why, right?
Yeah, sure.
Yep. I'm going to start doing that when people piss me off in meetings. I'm just going to go. And then they'll stop bothering me because they'll think I'm dangerous. I'm trying to control my anger.
Like, what's wrong with him? Is he about to lose his mind?
Right. Don't you think that would be fun? I think we should do that. Okay, just hearing a bit of Ed Sheeran just now made me want to hear some more. So, when we come back, we'll meet our guests. We're going to talk a little bit about hypnotherapy, Mubs. That's something that I know you're interested in.
Very interested. I want to know everything, how it works. I want to know everything.
Right. So we're going to speak to Ches Valenti and to Rabbi Cranes, who are both going to pop in to tell us about a book that they've written called Getting to the Core. And Ches is a hypnotherapist. And the book's editor, Warren Scott's actually the pen name of the rabbi. So he's going to pop by and talk to us as well. He grew up in Los Angeles. He's been all over the world. He moved to Jerusalem. He became a rabbi and did his master's in education at UNISA in South Africa. So we'll find out from them how we can get to the core of our subconscious beliefs and issues and move from pain and anger to understanding and forgiveness. And maybe you can end up a lot more mentally healthy than that poor woman in that witness stand in divorce court.
Oh, don't we need that as a nation?
Right.
Understanding, to get to a point of understanding.
And they'll help us figure out self-esteem, which is an even bigger issue in this country. Because if people just had a little more self-esteem, then they wouldn't get so angry when other people say things that don't actually affect them. Like if stuff doesn't bother you because you've got self-esteem, you don't get cross. You just go, and you're fine. You move on.
Can you imagine having an argument with someone and they do that? You would then become the violent one.
You would completely disarm them. They wouldn't know what to do.
I'm going to use that. I'm telling you, it's a tactic. But we'll find out from the authors of this very interesting book next what they think that we should all be doing to figure ourselves out, to start dealing with our anger and our pain and to find a way forward and out of our subconscious minds. All of that and more on the way. It's bound to be an interesting morning. It is Wednesday. It's the 1st of March, and it's just after 8 o'clock. CliffCentral.com. CliffCentral.com.